Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Yochai Korem.
So let's try to put everyone in the place where they actually can exceed, because then they're happy, because they're satisfied, and they can do their job really good. So it's on us as managers to place the people in the right position to actually focus on the good and not on the bad.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm joined by Yochai Korem, the CEO of cybersecurity vendor CyberInt. He's formerly the VP Emir of Cyberbit and has spent his career growing and scaling innovative technology companies in areas such as web intelligence, cellular localization, cyber range technology, and even founded the biggest Israeli tourism site, Tiuli, which he took to a successful exit. He's a BSc graduate of Tel Aviv University and gained his MBA at Reichman University. And I'm delighted that he's found time in his incredibly busy schedule to talk to us here in the conference room. So Yochai Korem, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
Thank you, Simon. I didn't remember all of this. So thank you for the great reminder.
My pleasure. So every hero has an origin story, and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from graduating Tel Aviv University through that stellar career we talked about and now being the CEO of CyberInt?
I'll try to take you in a few minutes through my short history. I like to say that CyberInt, which I am today, is a threat intelligence cyber company. And I like to say that I'm an intelligence officer from the last 25 years when I was 18, and you can now calculate my age. I enlisted into the IDF as an intelligence officer in the well-known and famous unit now A200, which in my days, hush from mentioning the name, even my father was not aware where I served. And I think for 6 years, I learned what it means to work in a very innovative environment and try to maximize your capabilities and lead others into great success, following what were required for us, which is to protect the nation of Israel. And in this time, I also went through an officer's course. I created many friends and many relationships, which helped me and guided me throughout my career. And I would, one advice, and I think we can get it later on too. I think this is the way you like to summarize some of your conversations, is one advice I would also say now, that the first position, I look at my military service, although I didn't get paid much, as my first career step in a way. Definitely the first career steps are critical for any person. It's not about the salary. It's about being the right place that can teach you. And you can get the right people that will, when you grow, they will grow either within the organization and other companies, and then you create your network. So network is really, really critical. And many steps of the way, this network, which I created, was very helpful going forward. So from that point, I learned after my military service, I learned my engineering degree and started working in as a Wi-Fi engineer in a company that did chipset for Wi-Fi. Very interesting. And from them, again, following friends who knew me, I went to Verint for 4 years to do product management. And then another friend who know me to another company for product to be a VP of product management. And then the commander of the A200 unit, which I knew from before, said, hey, let's go to Elbit. I have a cyber unit. So I joined him and we formed CyberBit. And there were many, many steps that are all, I can really say, the introduction was always through someone who knew me and I knew them. So it was some kind of a trust relationship to join and support. Until 2.5 years ago, I think this was the first time I was not, my network was not the one helping me. I got a call from a headhunter and she said, we are looking for a new CEO for CyberInt. And we thought it's enough time for you to be VP sales and VP product and other VP positions I've been to. And it's your time now. And I went through a very quick process, found or met the board members of Cyberint from Viola Group, which invested in Cyberint. And, you know, I think we had the click, very, very short. You know, it doesn't take a lot for both sides to decide this is something they want. And since then, I'm the CEO of Cyberint. This is the short version. If I was in any job interview, maybe I would provide more details.
Great stuff. Okay, so it's you paint an interesting picture of a career that's gone through product management through sales, and then now as a as a CEO. As a CEO, what do you feel are the primary elements of your career that you draw on the most in being able to do your job today?
There are different types of CEOs, so I can only share with what are my beliefs and what I'm doing. I had the luxury or the pleasure to work as a very techie person, as an engineer, and lead product teams, which at the end of the day drive the vision. So there's a vision to a company in the product. In many cases, you are the navigator of an organization, and I did it with very large groups, with very large products and programs. So I helped to build the vision and then take it one step or two step below to actually ask for requirement for the R&D. So I handled things like capacity planning and requirement definition, and not everything can be, you know, prioritization and customer requests and all kinds of other situations which, you know, teach you how business on one hand actually happens, and the other hand, how not everything you want can be accomplished. So how you, and as a product manager, and I think this was my biggest school in Verint, how do you influence people without authority, which is always a big challenge for any, you know, there are many people with managers in the name, they don't manage people. But there is a reason why there is a manager, product manager, customer success manager, and others, other managers, because they actually influence people and drive them without authority, without being able to command or do. And I think this is a very critical skill. It takes time to learn how to tell someone what to do. And I was not great at it at the beginning. You know, I would say I knew everything. I didn't understand the other side. I didn't listen well. You know, there's a reason why we have 2 ears and one mouth, right? To listen twice than we speak. You know, for when you are young, it's not always the case. So I think I learned different aspects of how a company works from the internal. And I also, as a product manager, learned what customers want and how to translate it into technical requirements. And then I moved into the sales and marketing sales side, and I did sales for many years. And I learned how you need to translate the value to a customer. So it's not about what features you have and what capabilities your product does, but is the relationship, the trust between you and the other side, at least in the B2B and B2G businesses I've been involved to. B2C could be different, of course, perspectives. So the trust that you create, the expertise you must own in the product you are selling to convince the other side, and to provide value, not just to say, you know, buy from me because I'm the best in the world. You need to explain to them why, if they buy from you, then their life could be better. And different values to different people, and understand the politics inside the organization, etc. So if I go back to your question, on one hand, I feel I have the technical expertise, and on the other side, the market, go-to-market and business creation expertise, which helped me. And I think if CEO has those capabilities, it can talk in one language to the product team and to the marketing and to the sales. But there are many even better CEOs than me that do not have all of those experience or skills and still can lead people. So at the end of the day, going back to the manager perspective I gave at the beginning, at the end of the day, it's about being a leader. Can you take a group of people that has very little in common, in a way, just working from the same company, and make them into a team that has the same vision, the same goal, the same language, the same small nuances that can, you know, have a small talk about the same, and they understand one another, and people from the outside would not understand exactly. So can you make them that team? Can you handle misunderstandings between them, because they are people and sometimes they have different perspective or different desires? And I think a good CEO and a good manager, CEO is just an example, is the one that can understand the qualities of people and try to take the best. And I learned from my VP HR, and I think she's very right here, you need to focus on the good. Sometimes we see people and tell them what they're not good at and what they need to improve. And sometimes people are just not good at something. You can push them to do, I know if you ask me to play soccer, I will always lose. There's no point. I will never be good at soccer. That's not my skill. But in other things, I'm really, really good. So let's try to put everyone in the place where they actually can exceed. And because then they're happy, because they're satisfied, and they can do their job really good. So it's on us as managers to place the people in the right position to actually focus on the good and not on the bad. It was a long answer. I hope.
No, that's fantastic. Which actually leads me on to another thought, which was when you were talking about your background and the fact that you have this hybrid almost of having a technical and a sales background. Something that always intrigues me when I'm talking to CEOs is that more often than not, when you are a VP of sales, you've been in sales. So you're managing people who are doing a job you've done before. When you're a VP of product, you've been a product manager. So you're managing people who are doing a job that you've done before. And if you look at most kind of VP level or even some C-level positions, you're typically managing people who are doing a job that you've done before. When you're a CEO, you're not, because you're now running the entire company. There's elements of the company, like, for example, finance. As far as I'm aware, you've never been in, you know, run, you've never worked in a finance team. You're now responsible for finance. You're responsible for HR, even though you've never been an HR manager. Okay. So how do you take the step from managing people where you've actually done their job before and can give them coaching and guidance based on the experience of doing it before, to now being in a role where you're managing people where you've never done the job before? How did you adjust to that?
I'm not sure I've yet accomplished, to be honest, this step. No doubt, and that when you're a VP or a manager for any sort, and you report to someone that understands the topic quite well, as you said, if you're a marketing manager and you report to VP of marketing, they know, they can guide you, they can help you. And when you're a VP and you talk to a CEO, the assumption is that the CEO does not understand as good as you in some areas. So the discussions need to be in a different way. In finance, indeed, I don't think I had some courses in university. I have done an MBA program, so I'm not clueless. So there is an importance, if you want to be a CEO, to go through this type of degree. But definitely, so luckily for me, my CEO is really top notch. And very quickly, what I'm trying to see, and also when I do a job interview with someone, okay, do they understand what they're talking about? If I drill down and I take whatever topic, they say I'm very good, you know, tell me a story about success, tell me about relation. So something, you know, give a pitch, if it's a salesperson, pitch me your product. And then I go and drill down. If, you know, if I do two double clicks, as we call it here in cyber, you know, join to one level down, they understand, and then another, they understand, I know that they are professionals. I don't need to understand what they told me, by the way. I just need to see the confidence and that they're able to analyze the situation from different perspectives and to give me advice or different alternatives to the situation, okay? And I always ask, always, I hope I do it always. You know, we all have our downside as well, but I try at least to not make the decision, but ask people to give me their advice. So this is the situation. These are the different alternatives. What is your advice? Because what I'm telling them is that they are responsible at the end of the day. I'm not looking to make the decision instead of them. I want them to make a decision because this is their expertise. And in some cases, I may have different perspectives on this topic or this decision. So I would say in areas which I do not understand, I need to verify and trust the person. And indeed, if you do not trust the VP that is working with you on a certain topic, could be personality, because, you know, different point of view or professionalism, or maybe this person is not, I was suiting for the position a year ago when the company was in a size X and now we are 2 or 3X, then they're not able to grow to the new requirements of the position. Then you're making a mistake if you keep them in their position, because everyone will suffer. You will suffer as a CEO because you don't trust them, and they will suffer because they will feel you don't trust them. In areas that I do understand, and there are areas which I understand and I like to understand personally, I really like to know the details. And this will be one of my second recommendations, is to, I call it tactical excellence, or really understanding the details, because from the details or through specific examples, you can understand what's working and what's not. So where sometimes my VPs are not happy with me is where I actually understand, and then I could be interfering or taking away from their, let's say, area of judgment in a way that is on not good for them to manage the team. And this is a struggle I still have, where to just let them go, and where, if I see something which I don't think or I think differently, how to interfere or intervene in a way which is still respectful for my VP that is there. But it's all about trust. I can tell you today, I have a management team I trust 100%, and I think they know what I'm looking for and they know how to communicate. And last point I will say here is continuous feedback. If there is something that is not working well, or if there is something working well, you should give a feedback. You should feedback the person. It was a great presentation. Thank you for the analysis. Or I would expect you to do ABC, because if you do not provide this continuous feedback, then they will not understand what you're expecting from them, and vice versa. I also ask for feedback, and sometimes they're truthful enough to give me the feedback. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I not, but at least I understand what's bugging them, and I can try to decide whether I want to change this process, activity, behavior, whatsoever.
Right. I want to just come back to a point you made just a moment ago about when to step in and when not to, okay? Because something that I think, having spoken to, you know, a number of leaders, particularly when someone's gone from, say, you know, VP sales to CRO or VP sales to CEO, particularly and sales being just one example of it, but this really happens across pretty much the entire field, is when you've delegated responsibility to somebody, and however much you trust them, sometimes there's a different opinion of what right is, okay? And if they are pursuing a strategy that you don't think is the right one, at what point do you jump in and, you know, insist on a change? Or do you just have to sort of, you know, put some scotch tape around your mouth and sit on your hands and, you know, wait for it to kind of play out? At what point do you step in and say, look, I'm sorry, ultimately, it's my head on the block, and I'm calling it, and I'm saying you have to do X instead of Y, even though you think that, you know, you might think that Y is better. I'm saying you have to do X. At what point do you do that? I mean, do you have a spidey sense? Do you have a, you know, how do you make that call?
Again, I don't know if I master this skill, and I've do it right enough times. At the end of the day, you need to decide within yourself. Again, as a manager to any, you know, it doesn't have to be a CEO. You work with a team leader, with a group leader, doesn't matter. When you classify them, are they an A player, or are they just okay, or are there something that, you know, requires improvement? What's your, and that could change over time. Your goal as a manager is to pick, take people which are not that good and put them to be good and transform them. And people who are excellent, help them to grow to their next career step, which is not always easy because they also have inspirations and you need to push them forward, and you may lose them in that process, but this is a topic for a different topic. So do you trust the person? And at the beginning, that I use the word trust. Trust takes time to develop on both sides. So at the beginning, you may not trust the person, and you will go into the details and want to hear the consideration, and may also tell them, hey, my decision is to do something else. A very bad thing for an organization, if you're a CEO, you're sure they're making mistakes and you're not mistaken, you're not doing anything about it. Because, you know, it's later too late and it's your responsibility. So what not to do? If you have a disagreement with a VP or a manager under you, try not, it's not always possible, not to do it in front of other people. Because then you cause them to defend themselves or you see their team in a situation which they're not comfortable with. So try to take that into a one-to-one conversation. So people say, let's take it offline. Sometimes it just means actually, let's never talk about it. But if you really care about it, take it as a note and talk to the person after the meeting or your next regular meeting whatsoever and say, this is why I think this is what needs to be done. Let's hear your in a not in a defensive way as a brainstorming. If you've built the trust in a good way, they will listen to you as well. They will be open. Okay. We work in Cyberint in what we call open mindset. So how we learn, it's not about criticism, it's about different opinions. At the end of the day, if I'm taking the hurdles, you say too many times, the person would not want to work for me. And I need to understand it. That's a risk. And I need to acknowledge that it's there. I brought them or they're here before me to execute a position. So there's no secret. I would say trust to talk one to one and share different ideas and say, you know, give it in a way that you're not commanding, you're suggesting. And I have few people that, because that's their nature, will say no at the beginning. But what I've learned over time, and you don't need to object immediately, say, okay, just think about it. And I found that 80% of the times they adopt my suggestion later on, because it takes time to you know, drop your perspective and adopt another one. And sometimes I was wrong as well. So I would summarize, it's all about communication in a one-to-one situation where you decide if you pull this card, you know, you have 1 point less in you know, the that you have in the trust level between you and your manager.
Right. No, that's great. Thank you for that. So just switching gears a little bit, I'm keen to explore the different challenges that exist or that you've seen and you've kind of worked through with different types of companies that you've been at. Okay. And I think probably the if I could just draw a couple of comparisons, I know it's going back to quite early in your career, but founding the tourism website. Okay. Starting it off, I would imagine, yeah, by yourself or maybe with one or two guys, right? Yeah, just you and your 10 fingers, and then scaling it to a successful exit nearly seven years later, and comparing maybe that in a similar kind of bracket, not quite the same, to Cyberint, which is, you know, a smaller but, you know, rapidly growing company, that being kind of like in one group, okay, and then on the other side. Working at Cyberbit, which, as I understand it, is a sort of self-contained entity within Elbit, which is one of the largest companies in Israel. It's an enormous utility and contractor and everything else. So from your perspective, what were the primary differences between working in a small, fast-growing startup versus, albeit a self-contained entity, working for an enormous organization such as Elbit? And how, as a leader, did you navigate these different challenges?
Let's start with Tiuli. Still, the website exists, tiuli.com, T-I-U-L-I.com. The largest website for, I would say, leisure time, hiking and travel. And maybe I'll open a bracket and tell 2 words about how I got to that.
Yeah.
So, funny story, when I was in the Israeli Defense Forces, there was a competition about how well you know the history and heritage and nature, and there was competition between your where you served as the base and then the entire force, and it came that I won the national champion, I would say, the IDF, and I became the number one in the IDF for Israeli history and nature knowledge and other things that are part of the way the IDF works. Wow. It was a very, very, and I learned that I can learn things and I can, and when I won this champion and I was general major general of the, I don't know how to translate it to English. You know, I thought, what can I do with this information? So great, I have this title. My mother and father are really, really happy. What should I do with it now?
A nice certificate on the wall.
Yeah, so it's on the wall. But, you know, they were quite happy with me even before. So that's not... So I served in a unit with a few thousand people. And I said, you know what? Let me try to share this knowledge. And every weekend, you know, before the weekend, I would send the suggestion where you can enjoy in nature in the next weekend, okay? So where you can do the next walkabout, where's the new interesting stuff? And because I was in a technological unit, I learned how to build a website. It was in the year 2000, 2001. So you can imagine what the website were back then. So I built the basic website internally, and you know, it became a database of knowledge of those ideas, because I thought there's no point just sending in an email, because what I sent 3 weeks ago could be still relevant for someone today. So I wanted to create a database and an interface and what we call today a website. Right. And when I finished my military service back in 2003, people says, yeah, you must continue. You know, we like your suggestions. So I already had a small groupie audience. And that's what I did. A few weeks after I finished my military service, I set it up in the internet, and I continued. So for me, it was my baby. Going back to your question, it was my baby, it was my idea, and I had to work full-time job. I was, you know, studying university, then worked in full-time in different companies, and in the night I would program, I would write hiking ideas, I would, you know, when I go off the weekend, my wife always, today she's my wife, of course, before she was my girlfriend, she was laughing that I would take pictures all the time, because I would think what I'm going to write. It was not just hiking for fun, I did it already with the idea of what I'm going to write about in the next night. So if you are an entrepreneur, which was the position there, it's all on you. You need to do the finance, the sales, you know, you need to do everything. And you have very little time. So what's important is how you maximize your capabilities and how do you bring other people to help you and advise you. And you need to take it step by step. In the contrary, so it's all about you. And do you have the internal engine? When you finish at 7 or 8 p.m. in a high-tech company, okay, it was no half job, no half-time job, can you continue until 1, 2 a.m. and push your own idea? And if you are able to do it, not for just 1 or 2 days, but for a few months or years, you're going to create something which is very valuable. And if you are not, don't be an entrepreneur, because there's no chance to do it. Just, you know, and Netflix is always easier to watch. You need to say, I'm not having, you know, Netflix time today, I'm doing something else. No Netflix at that time. When I did it, maybe it was a good reason I had free time. Going back to Elbit, Elbit is a big defense contractor. And then the question as a leader, there are so many resources in the company. So many. And the question, you have your goal, which you received from your boss, and you understand also the bigger vision and mission of the organization. And I think the biggest question is how can you... harnessed the power, experience, knowledge, connections of other people in the organization that are not in the same department and do not share the same problem or KPIs that you have, and tie them working with you. And I think in some cases, I was able to bring other people to work for me or with me to achieve my goal. And for any leader in any organization, it's not only about you and the team below you. Okay. As a manager, it's always about you and the team below you. You're a team, and you can be a great team manager for the team below you. But the biggest question, if you want to grow up in organizations, is how you work with your peers. So how you tie them to work together with you on the same goal. And in many cases, I was failing this task. I actually got some feedback from some of my managers that I'm a very good herd for my own, or I can lead my own team, but I'm not doing a good job by connecting other people, my peers, to my task or to my goal. And thus I'm good with my team. They like me, but it doesn't mean that I'm a good manager. And over the years, I've learned more and more how to adopt different skills to bring other people together with me to achieve my goal. So if I'm a salesperson and my customer needs something, I can work with the product team and convince them this should be the highest priority, and I can convince the marketing team to bring more resources to me, because know, they come up in the morning and they can work for me or for someone else. You know, I can tell them that's your job, but people don't do because you tell them. They do it because they want, because they're inspired, because they believe in what you're doing. And this is, at least in the Israeli high-tech industry, it's all about people want to do what they want and not because you told them. So
it's interesting. That goes back to what you were saying almost at the top of the conversation about one of the skills you learned very, very early in your career was to convince people to do things even though they didn't have to do it for you because they weren't working for you. So it's almost kind of full circle.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you need to learn very early is what's the motivation or what the other side translates your what you're talking to them. They have different backgrounds, different language. And what I failed again many times before, and I see other people fail as well, is they do not understand how the other side interprets what they're saying. Because they have different, even the basic English, the words, what it means, how to translate. People are not aware that some words and definition and acronyms are not the same for different people, okay? POC is point of contact or proof of concept, just as an example. And you can say POC all day long, but the other side doesn't, his interpretation is his or her interpretation is totally different and they don't understand you. As simple as that, as this case. And the way to overcome it as a technique is to ask for a feedback in a polite way. So what did you understand? And then you understand what they have not understood, which is amazing. It's unbelievable how you thought that what you said is very clear to them, and 100% this is not what I want. And this is one of the earliest things I had in my military service, that you know we created intelligence for something which was thought was the greatest, and it was all on weekends and you know high priority. And one day I called my customer, and he told me, I don't care about this information at all. That's not what I'm interested in. And that was heartbreaking in a way, because we spent, you know, weekends and vacations on working on this, whatever it was. And I understood that you always need to receive feedback from the other side, from your customer or from the other side in the conversation. And it humbles you to understand that, you know, you may need to take time estimations to be a little bit longer than if you would do it yourself. Okay. So if you work with a team, if I would do something, it'd take me one day. I would write a document, create an Excel presentation, whatsoever. But when you need someone else to do it, don't think they will take it one day and be disappointed if they're not able to accomplish the same thing in the same day as you, because they have different mindset and it takes a feedback loop. So when you manage a team or you lead a bigger group, you need to understand things will take slower than if you would do it yourself. But then you can do 10 things in parallel when you could only do one thing yourself.
Right, that's fantastic. Okay, so Yochai, what are your top three tips for someone who would like to follow in your footsteps and be a CEO of a technology company?
So what I find to be very, very effective is understanding the details. And when you understand the details, you're able to make decisions. So I definitely highly recommend, and from my team, I expect to understand the details better than me. Their profession, their position, and every time I went into details, I found what was the problem and how to fix it. And my recommendations or my request for my team is to be with tactical excellence. So tactical excellence sometimes, and I took it again from the Israeli chief of staff, which I met a few years ago, and he said, I can give a soldier the best cobbler vest and the best helmet and the best vision technology. But at the end of the day, if they walk on the top of the hill and the enemy can see their shadow very easily or whatever you call it, so nothing will protect them. They need to be with a tactical excellence, knowing to walk not on the top, but you know, a few meters below, so the hill itself hides them from the vision of the other side. Similar to everyone, if you're a marketing person, you need to master how to do ABM, account-based marketing, and you need to master social advertisement, and you need to master your HubSpot or whatever tools you're using to understand how the lead scoring goes. And if you do not master those skills as a professional person, you will not, you know, whatever tools we are buying and how much money we'll spend on marketing, because you do not have this tactical excellence, you will not be successful. Same for salesperson. You can be the best person. If you don't know to use Salesforce in a good way, you're not a good salesperson. And for a developer and every person in their own skill set. So my advice, be with tactical excellence. This will lead you to be professional in all layers. Everyone will see that, and you'll, you know, jump up in your career as you wish. It could be professional or managerial, whatever you want. So that was would be one. Second is what I refer to, be understand that the other side doesn't understand you. Could be your customer, your colleague, your friend, my wife, doesn't matter, my kid. Okay. It's communication is the biggest challenge for everyone. When I worked in Verint, I found out that more than 60% of my day job is just communicating to others. So it's about internal synchronization. And I think for every large organization, which is more than 10 or 15 people already, there's a lot of effort to translate knowledge of what you're doing, what you're planning to do, what you want to do with others, okay? So you can do that effectively or you can do it poorly. It's all about understanding what the other side doesn't understand. Highly recommend. And lastly, do what you are good at. If some people are stuck in their career in a point where they are just medium, okay? So try to always have multiple paths in your life. So I'm a CEO of Cyberint, but I also did my pilot license 2 years ago. So I'm a pilot. I was a carpenter when I was younger. I know to do rooftops. And so I have different perspectives. And I can take when I do my reserve service, like 2-3 weeks a year. So I have different perspectives and I enjoy it. And I know what I'm good at. And I try to path my career to a place where I'm really good at. And then soccer, I'm not good there. So I will never be a soccer player. The team asked me to come play with them. I said, no, don't want to fail there.
Okay, that's great. So what's next for you and for Cyberint? What's coming up?
Who knows? I think we know who the prophecy was given to, right? To fools and children. I hope I'm neither. I know that we are continuing to work very hard to make our customers happy and see value in what we provide. So whenever they have it, they need to make a choice to use Cyberint again or not. It's easy decisions for them. It's clear that I want to be. It's like I hope my wife makes every morning a decision. I still want to be with myself, not because I have to as the kids, etc. Because I see the same qualities and even more. So that's I'm using my personal life as an example of what I want our customers to feel, and also our employees. It's the same. So in the last 2 years, we almost quadrupled the company in customers, in revenue, in functionality, in many other things. We did a very nice financial round. So I hope to myself and for everyone working with us in Cyberint to do at least the same in the next 2 years. I believe we are really, really well equipped in this, you know, more challenging economical situation. I think we have good technology, great go-to-market, which we didn't talk about today, and maybe for another session. And we are very cautious in looking for feedback, asking our customers, our partners, and play what they're not happy with, so we can at least be aware. And then, of course, we can decide whether they want to change it or not and make an impact. Cyberint is all about impactful intelligence, so we want to make an impact. So I hope also with your help, Simon, today in this discussion, people will learn, and I've made an impact to some people that are listening to this session today.
I'm sure you have. And if people wanted to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So Yochai Korem, Yochai, in LinkedIn. And I pay all requests I accept. I always think that's the right tool to get connection. And my email is yochai@cyberint.com. So also feel free to shoot an email.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure the links to that are in the show notes below. Yochai, this was an absolute joy. And you're right, there's so much more we can still talk about. So I may just twist your arm to see if I can drag you back in for another conversation. But this was an absolute pleasure and a joy. And just to get an an insight into, you know, the mindset and the sort of inner workings of being a CEO and being a leader has just been an absolute delight for me, and I'm sure to the people listening. So for now, until I drag you back into the conference room, Yochai Karan, thank you so much for joining us here on the conference room. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to international PR, publicity and branding consultant, Brooke Young.
The bottom layer is always going to be that emotional foundation. It's going to be, I do this type of work because I want to help people, because I want women to be empowered to grow their finances. I want to change the way that people look at social justice. Like you mentioned, there's always an emotional undercurrent to every business.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.